Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. I am a broker here at Daniels Trading. I work with speculators and hedgers, broker assisted, and we have a great online platform. We also have the hybrid category, which is a mix of both. So if you're a current client or you're thinking about being one, please contact me anytime about what you hear on this podcast. And if you'd like to check out my newsletter and get updates when the podcast comes out, you can text a number 33777, type in the message Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R, click send, follow the instructions, and you'll get that. You can also read out more about me at turnerstake.com and turnerstakeag.com. So let's jump into it. So yesterday was just an unbelievable day for the crude oil market. I wrote about it a little bit in the newsletter. I think there's value in the back end of the crude oil market, and I do think that. You know, I was looking at December and farther out, like in the low 30s, and here we are about 28, 29 bucks, and that's one thing. But one thing I did not want any part of, and I still don't, is the front end of the curve. What we saw in May was just really out of this world. I was writing how the day be, it was probably one of the top five things, crazy things I've seen in the markets. I got a few responses out of that. They wanted to know what beat this, or what else was in the top five, how that was in the top one. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But just to go over what happened with crude real quick, and then I'm going to finish the podcast with the grains. So the crude oil market had been trading in the 20s. In the front month, and there was a lot of excitement, you know, in between the crude bulls about the OPEC cuts, and you know, stay at home would, you know, be lifted sometime late spring, early summer, and that was helping support the crude oil market. What ended up happening is a couple of things. The OPEC cuts aren't that big; they're only for a couple of months. They aren't starting yet, and what's going on is we still have. We lost about 30 million barrels of demand per day, and we're only cutting by 10 or 15 million barrels. And the thing is, so you got that going against you. Plus, refineries are just not buying crude oil anymore because they just don't need it. I mean, we're driving, I think our fuel demand is 50% less in this country. So refineries are shutting down ethanol plants. There's a lot of ethanol that's shutting down. So if you have crude and you can't sell it to a refinery because they're not taking it because they don't need to produce any more heating oil or gasoline, or it just is a whole lot less, you got to put it in storage. And what happens when storage fills up, right? And even though some of the reports we've seen is storage hasn't filled up yet, and it may not fill up for a month or maybe in a month, the thing is, unless you've already contracted out that storage or you own it or you've already made arrangements, there's no way to get storage kind of out of the blue. Like if you weren't planning on it, if you didn't plan ahead and now you need storage, it's not available. Like it may not be physically taken up yet, but it will be and someone's already claimed it or paid for it or reserved it. So then what happens? This is an interesting so now just from a academic or theoretical perspective, what happens when crude oil can't be sold? Because crude oil by itself isn't worth a whole lot. It's really what's refined with it, right? What it becomes, right? If the end product, the refineries don't need it, all right? So there's no, in the short term, in the right this second, there's no economic value. I'm not saying crude is worthless, and it will be worth something down the road, but when we pump so much of it, no one wants to buy it. In that moment, and I can't stress that enough, in that moment, it's worthless, right? Then you got to store it because we know it's going to be worth something down the road. But now you can't store it because there's no storage options. And so you say, okay, well, hold on to it for a little while until I find storage. But here's the thing with the futures market. May futures came off the board today. So a lot of people I work with, anyone, spec or hedge, that was in May crude futures got out last week. And I've been doing this for a long time. And I remember getting an argument, especially early on in my career, about not letting speculators hold crude oil into the last trading day. And they'd always, you know, give me a tough time about it. And we'd always say, well, it's illiquid, and, you know, what if there's an out trade, or you forget to get out, or you don't get out in time, and then you got to go into the delivery process, and we got to retender, and, you know, da-da-da-da-da. You know, if you really like crude, why didn't you just roll over in the week before? Anyone who's traded in those markets probably had that conversation at one point in time. And crude's a little bit different because the thing with the grain markets is you can deliver, you know, first notice day to last trading day. You've got about a month period there. And so, you know, let's say you're long May corn. May corn goes in the first notice day, the last business day of the year, which means if you're long on the last, I'm sorry, in the last business day of April. So May corn, first notice day is the last business day in April, last trading day in April. And if I'm long on the last, you know, when we come into the last trading day in April, and the short, you know, I can get delivered on. It's all about who's short. The person who's short makes the decision when to deliver. All right? They have the power in that. And it goes by, like, oldest date. So let's say someone says they're short. I have the oldest date in my corn. I got to take delivery. Exchange says, hey, you're taking delivery. You're long. You know, let's just make the math easy. One contract of corn. It's at $3. That's $15,000 of corn. You own it. Here's your receipt. Trader's like, I don't want it, which, you know, I want to get out. You got to retender, which means you go into the futures market, you sell the futures. So you're long the receipt, right, on May corn. I go into the market, I sell the futures. So now I'm short the futures. And then I tell the exchange, hey, I'm delivering my corn. And then, which you can because you're short the futures market, you've got the cash receipt from the one you didn't want to take of. You know, hold of, and then the next poor sap gets delivered on the next day because you retendered it. I mean, that's how it goes for the most part. And by the way, the paperwork and the pain that it is for the FCM to do all this stuff is going to cost you about $100 per contract. All right. So I have been delivered on once. It was early on in my career, and I got to tell you. If there's a contract, I don't know what the stats are, but if I had to guess, in soybeans, probably the contract that's mistakenly or inadvertently most delivered on by traders is going to be January soybeans. And I am going to get into crude oil for a second. This all does make sense. But in January crude oil, and that was like in the business, you're usually like a junior broker for like 6 months or a year, and then they let you be, you know, just a regular broker until you can do that for a while. And then you kind of move up to senior broker, and then people start making up titles about VP and stuff like that. But in the first 6 months to a year, you're a junior broker. I remember it was my second year. I wasn't a junior broker anymore. I was a full-fledged broker, started around my own book of business, had a client who used to like to trade soybean spreads. And he was long January, and he was short one of the back months. I can't remember if it was March, May, or July. It doesn't really matter. But anyways, you know, so if you're long January beans, and you delivery is the last day in December. Now, the reason why if I had a bet January gets delivered on the most inadvertently is because no one's around at the end of December. I wasn't paying attention. The client, you know, he had a kind of like a hybrid account. He'd do some stuff online, some stuff with me, and we talked about it, and, you know, it would email about positions. And he was on vacation too. And, you know, December 30th, you know, came, and we should have gotten out, and we didn't. None of us were in the office. New Year's Eve, the 31st, was the, was the first day we could have gotten delivered on. We didn't. Come in, the next day, where the first would have been the holiday, and whatever that next day was, that business day was, we got the notification, and we were delivered on. And it wasn't a big deal. Like, it ended up costing us $100, and, I ended up paying $50 for it, and the client paid up $50 for it, and because of the nature of it was a hybrid account. You know, if it was broker-assisted, I would have paid the full thing. If he was self-directed online, he would have pulled the full thing, paid the full thing, but we had a good relationship. It was a hybrid account. We just kind of split it and, went along our ways, and it really wasn't a big deal. But that was a liquid market. There wasn't anything going strange on in soybeans. There wasn't a shortage of stocks. And most of the time, that's what happens when you get delivered on. It's really not a big deal. You can almost immediately retender it, especially if it's a big liquid market. And with the grain markets, you've got a month, which you never should wait that long. I mean, if you get delivered on, you get out and retender immediately. But in theory, you do have some time before the delivery date comes, like 3 weeks later. So that's the grain markets. Crude oil is different. In crude, May crude, the last trading day was today. So April 21st. And the reason why they do that is delivery does take place in May for crude, but it's behind the scenes. So you get delivered after today, whoever's still long crude is gonna take delivery, and arrangements are made, and there's a process, and when you eventually take delivery, it is in the beginning of May, and there's Cushing, Oklahoma, with where all the crude is stored, and this whole big process. All right. So here's the deal. Here's the problem with the – and think about it. You're like, why are there different rules for the energy markets, and there's different rules for grains? There's even different rules for cattle and livestock, because feeders and hogs are cash settled based on index, so it'd just be live cattle. Why are there different rules? Because there used to be different exchanges. The CBOT used to be its own thing. The NYMEX used to be its own thing. The COMEX was its own thing. CBOT, the CME, now it's the CME group. They ended up buying all of them, but they had their different ways of doing things too. So what ends up happening here is in the crude oil market, you've really got to be out of that market a couple of days before last trading day. And really it's the week before, and you can see the volume in the open interest leaving the front month and going to the back month. So a lot of times it's on the second business day. In this scenario is on the second business day, and we get these reports and we look at, say, hey, we should be getting out of crude. So a lot of people are out of crude by May. If you stayed in, chose to, or just didn't realize what was coming, the problem was you have a thin market. Refineries are not buying crude. There's no storage available to you. So when we came in on Monday, there were still over 100,000 in the open interest, 100,000 contracts on Sunday night into Monday, and 100,000 people. And a lot of people got to get out. And if you don't got to get out, what are you going to do? So one, there's also something known as a long squeeze. And what ended up happening, the reason why crude oil could go down to a negative price or minus, 30, whatever it ended up being, is that once the market hit zero, I don't think people realized that it could go negative, but it definitely can. And think about it this way. If there's no economic value temporarily, and in this case, there's no economic value for crude, excess crude right now, can't do anything with it, and you can't store it, then you got to pay someone to take it. Now, crude probably should be, with storage available, anywhere between like $6 and $10, right? But if there's no storage, then what are you going to do? I mean, I'll explain it two ways. One, let's say someone came to my front yard, put one barrel of oil right in the driveway, drove away, did it in the middle of the night. I wake up. I see this one barrel of crude sitting in my driveway. What do I do with it? I don't want it. I mean, if someone came to my house and said, hey, I'll cart it away for you for $100 and do away with it, I think I'd have to pay it. I mean, I'm not going to put it in the backyard, and hide it behind the shed or something like that. There's nothing I can do with that, right? So, or think about it this way in the grain markets. What happens if, in theory, no one's buying corn, right? You know, no one wants to buy it. They already have enough. Let's say it's at harvest and we've got like a 4 billion carryout and no one needs it for feed because they're all stocked up. There's no demand for ethanol. And let's say all the elevators are full and all the on-farm storage is full. And for an extra wrinkle in the world of the hypothetical, let's say there's some government regulation that says you just can't, you know, dump it on the ground and place a tarp over it, you know. Kind of like, you know, I mean, I know that's unrealistic, but that's kind of the way you think about crude. Like, you can't just store crude anywhere. You can't dump it out in the river, you know, or in the park, right? I mean, we all remember the Valdez and what happened with BP in the Gulf. So, you know, what are you going to do with this stuff? It's expensive to deal with. And there's a lot more regulations because of the nature of crude oil. I mean, you can have a pile of corn or soybeans, you know, sitting in the field and covered. You know, you really can't do that with crude oil. And that makes things a lot more complicated too. So in the near term, May just came off the board. I want to say it's around $9 or $10. I would think that's where June is too, is about $9 or $10. Should we go negative? No, we should not go negative. All right. I can see how it happened. It's more of a dynamic of the market, and it's called a long squeeze. You really never see a long squeeze. We're all familiar with the short squeeze, and we see the blow off top as the shorts finally get squeezed out. What the long squeeze is it happens into delivery. The longs get delivered on, can't get rid of it, and have to sell and get out at any price. And because in theoretical, prices can go negative, they will. And that's what we saw happen yesterday. If storage was working or if the refineries were open, that negative price wouldn't happen. Another issue that I've been seeing is this ETF, USO, the U.S. Oil Fund. I think there used to be another oil fund way back in the day, VIX, which eventually had to be delisted. And the problem with ETFs in crude oil is the curve kills them. It just kills them. I've always said to farmers and hedgers, you know, one of the things you can really do to help yourself is on the rally, sell the deferred contracts in the summer and let the carry work for you over time. The reason being is the odds really are against you if you're long for the long term in the commodity markets because you have to pay storage and carry costs. So you want to be long in the short term unless you have something that's very small storage and carry costs over time and you get a big move. Then it doesn't matter so much. But if you want to play the long game, or not the long game as bullish, but you want to be in something for a long period of time, if it's for a long period of time, you're always much better selling. And it works the best in selling the deferred contracts. And who it works best for are grain producers, whether it's selling the back months of corn, soybeans, or wheat, whatever they're doing. Because over time, they're the ones that collect that carry. Which is kind of second nature to them sometimes because they're all bulls at heart, and so am I. But that's the way it is. Now, imagine an ETF where you're buying this ETF, and it's always buying crude or corn or soybeans or wheat or whatever it may be, and it holds on to the front month of the contract. And then when it comes time to roll a week before, you know, first notice day or last trading day, whatever it may be, they roll to the next month. Well, they're always selling at the front month price and buying in the back month. And then, you know, in the short term, you can get nice moves in the commodity markets. But over the long term, we always revert back to the mean. So these ETFs, all they're doing, they're just getting chopped to death on the cost to carry. And that's, you know, and so that's one thing. That's one problem with those ETFs and why it's better to just be in the straight commodity markets. But the second thing is, too, those ETFs held like 25% of the open interest, I think, heading into the final week of trading. So when they had to get out, it was a lot of volume to get out too. And apparently there is some rumors here that they were rolling into June, rolling into July, and they were also still rolling apparently in, you know, on Monday. I don't know if that's true, but those are some of the reports that came out. We'll have to see what the aftermath is. But long story short here, crude oil can go negative. Any commodity can go negative. It's extremely rare. It can happen. And the way it happens, two things have to happen for a commodity to go negative. Three, actually. to go negative, you need to have no current demand at all. Like, things are so bad, there's no demand at the moment, which is what's going on with crude oil. Two, you can't store it anywhere. Because the thing is, like, it doesn't matter if you have no demand for it. You can always put it away in a container knowing that, hey, eventually we are going to have demand. But if there's no storage or storage is full, that's an issue. And the more complicated the product, like storing the regulations with the EPA and having to store crude oil are so much stricter and inexpensive than it is compared to, let's say, storing corn. And then, you know, and then to the size of the down into the negative is going to be how many people are long that have to get out in the short time frame on where we are with delivery. And it's called the, and that's where the long squeeze comes in. And you combine those three and you get negative prices. It really is something. It's going to be real interesting to see what happens with June here. June's at like 10 or 11 bucks. And here's the deal. There's like a million open interest. What happens if we get to the delivery period again in June and refineries still don't want the crude and we haven't figured out the storage situation? If there's too many longs, the open interest is too big into June and they can't get out and we're going into delivery, like, I don't think we go down to minus 37 again, but could we go to zero or trade negative like $2 or $3? Maybe. It's going to be interesting. So that's the crude oil situation. What's going to go on in the future? Brent is getting crushed now, and Brent's going to start being in the teens, and I would love to – I'd really like to know if Brent gets down here. Brent is what OPEC is really getting – which is more tied to OPEC and prices, not so much WTI. But OPEC sits down and really starts cutting big time. I think the stay-at-home orders have to come off soon. I think Illinois and some of the other states are now going to go probably to the end of – to the June 1 – Memorial, you know, it makes sense. They'll probably go to, like, right past Memorial Day weekend, right? They probably don't want people traveling and getting out and going all over the place for Memorial Day weekend. You have to stay at home until Memorial Day weekend and you bring it up. Open things up, excuse me. My personal opinion on the whole thing is I do think, I don't know, maybe I'm completely off here, but to me it makes sense to start opening up the economy based on density of population. And the larger the density, the longer the stay at home happens, the shorter, you know, the lower the density. Maybe, you know, it's easier to do social distancing. I live in the suburbs. I'm about 20, 25 miles outside of the city, not even in Chicago or Cook County. I'm in the next county over. You know, and it's fairly easy to social distance, even going to the store, like being always 6 feet apart from someone and wearing a mask and, you know, it's not like living in Chicago or New York in the city where you really can't avoid anybody and you have to be right next to someone to coexist. So I don't know. Maybe that's how we start seeing it. Like, I also run a when I was a kid in high school and college, I played lacrosse, and I now help run my local lacrosse league. And I only bring it up because, you know, we IHSA, Illinois High School Association, canceled all spring sports today. And we were thinking about, well, what are we going to do with sports and, you know, what's going to come back first and, you know, are we going to play in the summer or, you know, everyone's just kind of hoping football starts August 1st. And, you know, the more you think about it, the bigger the stadium, the bigger the crowd, the less likely that's going to come back sooner, right? Because it's just more and more people. Meanwhile, like, you know, T-ball, you know, where you got 10 kids per team, you know, a couple of coaches and a bunch of parents, that's going to be under 50 people at any one place, right? So, you know, that you could probably have. So what you'll probably see is, like, local rec leagues start first and then go into, let's say, the youth travel system and high school system second, and then small colleges and sports that really don't generate crowds, which really means everything except for men's basketball and men's football, right? And, you know, no disrespect to the other sports, but, you know, kind of got to pay attention to the TV ratings there. And then, you know, and then finally the big professional sports. Or honestly, you could probably, you know, rank the big college you know, money makers, right, with the professional sports. And that's when it'll all come back. And maybe the economy opening comes back that way, too. That's the most likely scenario in a lot of ways. And I just, you know, if you think about it, so that is maybe just be an example of how everything else opens up, too. And then how do we get back up to prior use of energy, you know, and getting business back? So maybe we start crawling back in June and July, but things don't really get revved up until, let's say, December, January, or February. Los Angeles already said no more sporting events and concerts and huge, big public events until 2021. I think the Lakers and Clippers are going to use their practice facilities for games. You know, maybe have only like 10 rows of people, like in the stadium, just so there's like someone in the background cheering, so it looks good on TV. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. But you know, the reason why it pertains to crude oil is just the general economic activity overall, right? So, and how that's going to be. So, it looks like we're going to be down here for a little while longer. And I want to transition now into corn. I've been getting last thing on energies. I think it's very difficult to be involved in the front months as long as stay at home is enacted. I don't think you can really get into the energies heavy. And if you are getting into energies, you want to be in the deferred months, like way out. I mean, these 20 or further. And then when, and not come back farther in the curve until we start seeing some kind of reopening of the economy. And finally, hold on one second here. For the economy to really open back up, another thing you got to watch is you need two things. One, you need treatment, right? Because who's really going to be going out of their house and wanting to open up your businesses if you don't have to? If you have to, you have to. But if you don't have to, anything that's not mandatory, you know, in order to feed your family or, you know, provide a living or, you know, get around, you know, who's going to be really taking that risk if there's no effective treatment? I think things really start to get better when there's an effective treatment. So if you do get it, you can go to the doctor, you can get tested, you get treated for it. And then I don't think things go 100% back to normal until there's an actual vaccine. It's probably a two-step deal. Anyways, enough of that. Let's just get to corn real quick. Here's the thing with corn. We're at $3, and we had a low today of $3.01 in the May. Adis is like $3.30 or something like that. Where do we go? How low can we go? I mean, everyone's looking at these prices and being like, what's going on? I get it. Here's the lows. Here's the potential lows for corn. All right. Now, when we used to do this, it used to be for wheat. Because wheat at one point got so bad. It was below corn. It was like in the threes. People were like, what is going on with wheat? How low can it go? And we used to say this. You take the loan value. You add back the whatever the basis is to get the futures price, that theoretical futures price, and that's your bottom. All right. Don't throw your phone down or your headphones, whatever you're listening to here. But so the loan value on corn for 2020 is $2.20. So let's say national basis right now is about 30 under on average, depending where you are. And, you know, some places are higher, some places are lower. Let's also imagine that because of all the ethanol demand we lose for corn, old crop is really about like a 2.5 billion carryout, maybe even 3 billion, depending how bad this ethanol situation is, bad when it's all said and done for old crop. And new crop ends up with the acres that we have and the huge carry-in we'll have, and like, so we get a trend line yield, maybe we're at 4 billion, right? So old crop, 2.5 to 3 billion, old crop 2.5 to 3 billion, new crop 3.5 to 4 billion. At that point, the national basis when we get to harvest is probably going to be about like 50 under, kind of like how it was tariffs. Like I remember a lot of the average for bean basis when we had when the worst of the tariffs was like a dollar under. And I want to say corn was like 50 under. And if you had a 4 billion new crop carryout and, you know, a close to a 3 billion on the old crop, that would probably be the same effect, I think. I think it does the same thing. So if the loan value of corn is 270, and if we're looking at a 50 basis because we're swimming in corn, old crop and new crop, come the fall during harvest, that puts these futures at 270. And so I think that really, I'm not saying we're going to 270, but if I had to put in the worst case scenario low, how low can it go? It's probably 270 or in that area, because you got to ask yourselves, in the big money and the big money flow, what's the point of selling or continuing to be short if these corn gets to 270, if the basis is around 50 nationally and the loan value is 220? And that's it. And we did that same thing for wheat, that same exercise for wheat a couple of years ago. And I got to tell you, we were really pretty close to where those lows end up being and where we started to see the short covering. That doesn't mean we're going to go, you know, sky high if we do a hit there. But just to give everyone an idea where the cash prices really can go to, for May, it's probably $3 for a while. If we break below 299 and close below 299, we could live in the high twos for a while. Again, I don't see us going below 270, even, you know, in old crop, because you would think, the you know, we're right around there just because the loan value. I mean, if we get to 270 in the futures, then you would think the basis would be even weaker, and the loan value is what it is. But you know, we're not going to $1, we're not going to $1.50, we're not going to $2, you know, in corn. But we are $3, $3.10 now, and there is the chance we can go lower. Now we do have the spring planting going on. We could have weather rallies. We could have a short covering rally. The funds are almost short 200,000 contracts. That's a lot to be short. They can certainly put on more, but there is, if they do want to come out of these things, they certainly can in a hurry, and it would be a big move, but there's no reason to. Now, in terms of the loan value for soybeans is $6.20. Worst case, let's say you got a dollar basis nationally because we're swimming in beans, which I don't think we will be, by the way. So maybe in my theory here, potential low for soybeans is 720. But I got to tell you, that would be if we're swimming in beans, like 6, 7, 800 million bushels, like the billion bushels we had a couple of years ago. And right now we're projected to have 300 or 400 million. Even if we got the 500 million, we're not going to have a dollar under basis nationally on average. Maybe 50. So I'm thinking high sevens is probably the real potential low for November beans during harvest. But the upside with that tight stocks is probably closer to 9. So, you know, if soybeans do get up into the high 8s, low 9s, it's probably a sell. The, you know, if we are selling them and selling them on the board and looking to ride it down, we're going to say high 7s is our target. And we just went over the corn. Going forward, I think we will see some pressure on corn going into first notice day. I do think we'll see some short covering rallies in the first week or two of May. The problem is that May WASD comes out, and we're going to see. We may not have 97 million acres corn, but I'm going to be surprised if it's lower than 95. And it's, you know, that's only 300 million bushels of corn coming off the balance sheet for the expected balance sheet. And, you know, we're going to be adding, you know, from the production side. But, I mean, the USDA is probably going to be forced to make reductions in corn demand for ethanol. So, you know, that could more than offset that. It's not going to be pretty. I know prices are already low. I'll be looking to sell corn on rallies over 340 in the new crop. I still have a bearish bias. I don't want to, I mean, I know we're at cheap prices here, but I think rallies and corn are going to be sold. I wouldn't mind taking some shots on the long soybean side as we head into kind of seasonal periods of potential rallies. And that's how we'll handle that. So it is a long podcast today, half hour, but I do think there's some good stuff in here. One about the crude oil market, what to look forward to, and also getting some real pricing expectations on corn and how low it can go. I think a lot of people have been asking that question after this big move lower. So if you like this and want to work with me, let me know. If you're a client here and, you know, this sparks some ideas and you want to, you know, add a little bit to your marketing plan or trading plan, give me a call and we can do more of this stuff. I still like the bear spread in Dece 20 versus Dece 21 for the corn market. For the crude, I think we just kind of have to wait and see. And I do think there's some potential to the upside for soybeans. So have a great week, everyone. If you have any questions, you can give me a call, 312-706-7610, 312-706-7610. All my contact information is in the show notes. You can also, if you want to take a look at the newsletter and get notifications when the podcast comes out, you can also text 333-777-3777, message Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R, and you can get it that way too. Visit me at turnerstake.com or turnerstakeag.com. So have a good night, everyone. Stay safe out there, and I'll be putting out our trade ideas as we, in the newsletter, or tailor something for you if you contact me. All right, thanks very much.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.